The following shiur has been presented by Rav Shmuel Binyamin Honigwax, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
Gittin Daf Yadalot. Al Gemara seems to say that if somebody wants to send a present to somebody else, and the receiver of the present dies during the lifetime of the Noisin, even if the Noisin was a Shchivmara and he was giving the present but Matna Shchivmara, as long as the recipient of the present was alive at the time that the Noisin handed the present over to the Shliach, the halacha would be that the Yershim of the recipient, the inheritors of the recipient, would inherit this present. The Rishonim in Baba Basra ask a question. L'chaira, this doesn't make any sense. How is it possible that the Yershim of the recipient inherits the present? Since we know that Man HaShchivmara is only kindness, when the Shchivmara dies, we should say that the present is only completed at the time of the giver's death. So how is it possible for the recipient to be kind of the present, to acquire the present after he's already dead and give it over to his Yarshan? It would seem, according to a simple reading of the Gemara, that even after a person is dead, he can acquire the Matana and cause it by his acquisition to go over to his Yarshan. So there's arguments in the Rishon and Baba Basra whether this indeed is the case, or whether we would say that since the giver handed it over to the shliach while he was alive, even though the giver is a shchivmara, even though the person giving the present is a shchivmara, we would say that hoylich is kischi mechayim, that the intention of the person giving it is that the shliach should be zoicha mechayim, and indeed that's what happens. The recipient of the present acquires it while he's alive rather than after he's dead. So the argument in the Rishonim, how we treat such a situation. This became relevant when one time I was asked the question that there was a woman who passed away, and the husband, she passed away in a hospital, she had some kind of illness, and the husband wanted to sue the doctor. And according to the law, any proceeds of that lawsuit would be split equally among the husband of the woman and her children. And the question was, the father wanted the children to sign off on a settlement with the insurance company, and the children said, we don't want to sign off, because the children felt that their father was not careful with his money, he may gamble the money away, and they were reluctant to sign off that the money can go directly to the father and that he should have control over it. The question is, according to the Din Torah, who does this money really belong to? When the insurance company pays out the proceeds of the lawsuit, who would that money go to? Who has rights to that money according to the Din Torah? According to the Din of the Umut Olam, they would split the money. According to the Din Torah, would that also apply or not? What's the root of this question? So there's a few different sodom you could say. One possibility is that we would go completely with the halacha of the Umos Olam. Whatever they do, that's what we would do. Why? Because since this payment is not necessarily possible, and is not the insurance company is not obligated to pay this payment according to the Din Torah necessarily, it's possible that the Din Torah would say that the insurance company is not obligated to pay the payment. So, and it's likely that the Din Torah would not be mechayiv the insurance company to pay the payment. In other words, it's likely according to the Din Torah that the doctor would not be obligated to pay for this damage that happened to the patient. So therefore, it's possible that since this payment, since this chiyuv, this obligation to pay, it was created by Dina de Malchusa, it's possible that it would be completely bound by the laws and the guidelines of Dina de Malchusa. However, there's another option that we have to deal with, that we can say that even though the actual payment was created by Dina de Malchusa, and without Dina de Malchusa, the obligation to pay would not exist, nevertheless, we would say that once the payment is made, it then becomes subject to Din Torah. At that point, we would have to determine what din Torah is. So according to the first Tzad, there's no question that the money would be split evenly among the father and the son. According to the second possibility, that din Torah would somehow play a role in determining who gets the money, we would have to decide what would happen to a similar payment in din Torah. So the Tzad in Baba Kama that seems to say that the Gemara discusses over there the obligation to pay kofer. When an ox gores a person, the person's yarshim, his inheritors, are paid what's called kofer. Some kind of payment because of the fact that he was killed. And the Gemara and Tosis over there seem to indicate strongly that the halacha of this payment, the fact that the payment is paid to the inheritors of the person, and the Gemara says over there that the payment is not paid to the husband. The husband has no rights to that payment. Why doesn't the husband have rights to the payment, even though a husband generally inherits everything that his wife had? The answer is because the husband does not inherit anything that the wife did not acquire physically in her lifetime. Any payment which was obligated to the wife, but she did not take possession of that money or item in her lifetime, would not be inherited by the husband. Rather, will go to other inheritors of the wife. And the Gemara says that kofer is similar to this, and Taisa says that kofer is even more considered more ro'i than other payments. It's not considered acquired by the wife at all, because since the payment was only obligated to come after the wife's death, therefore the husband has no rights to that payment. So according to that, it would seem that we could compare this to a case where there's a lawsuit filed and the payment is being made only after death. And according to that sugya, it should come out that the only people who are entitled to this payment are the yarshim, the children, not the husband. The husband has no rights to any of it. Not only doesn't he get the first half, he doesn't get the second half either. That's what it seems according to the Gemara and Bava Kama. However, there are achronim that take issue with the simple reading of the Gemara and Taisus, and they say that this doesn't make any sense. How is it possible to say that the laws of inheritance apply to kofer? Since kofer was not owned at all by the woman, it was not acquired at all by the woman while she was alive, it doesn't make any sense to say that she then that her inheritors inherit the kofer from her. She never owned it. How is it possible for the obligation of kofer to be chal to the woman and then for her yarshim to get it from her? So the Minchas Chinuch and the Ar Sameach both learn the Gemara in a completely different way. They understand that the guidelines of Yerusha don't apply at all to something which was not acquired by the person before death. However, we would say that when we're trying to determine who the Torah obligates the mazik to pay kofer to, the guidelines of that chiyuv that was originally chal on the mazik depend on who the yarish is. So if the husband would yarshin a similar type of thing, in other words, if the husband would yarshin roi, something which was not physically acquired by the woman before her death, then we would say that when the Torah says that the mazik, the person whose ox caused the damage, is required to pay to the yarshim, the intention of the Torah is to obligate him to pay to the husband. However, if we say that the husband does not yarshin something that is roi, that is not physically acquired by the woman before her death, then the halacha would be that when the Torah says that the kofer has to be paid to the yarshim, the intention of the Torah is that it has to be paid to the children. So according to them, money which is acquired after death is not subject to the rules and guidelines of Yerusha. The only reason that the Gemara brings in the idea of Roy in the context of kofer is when we're determining what the intention of the Torah was to give the money to. There's no such thing as a person acquiring something after death and then inheriting, then causing it to be inherited by his children. If that's the case, then it would still be likely that the father and the children would split this payment evenly, because since the defining factor over here is who the intention is to give it to. In this case, since the intention of the will obviously is to give it half to the father and half to the children, so the father will get half and the children will get half, and we wouldn't say that the father doesn't get any part of it because it's Roy, because this has nothing at all to do with Yerusha. It doesn't say anywhere that it's not something that the Torah said that it's supposed to be given to Yerushim of this woman. This is the Din Malchus is saying you give it half to the father and half to the children. So it's possible that even if you say that Din Torah would play some kind of role over here, nevertheless, according to the Minchas Chinuch and the Arsa Meach's understanding, the halacha would be that it would be split evenly between the father and the children. However, I did find a Shuvas Maram that seems to indicate the other way around. The Shuvas Maram says, it discusses a very, very similar case where there was a husband who was killed, and the wife sued the people who killed the husband, and there were the husband owed money to people, and the Balei Chayiv wanted to take the proceeds of that lawsuit, and the Maram Lublin says that those people have no right to the proceeds of the lawsuit because they can't take Baroi Kibamuchtik, and the Maram says that it goes to the Yarshim within Yerusha, and he compares it to the places in Bava Kamma. So it would seem clearly, according to the Maram, that the guidelines of Yerusha, the guidelines of inheritance of the Torah, do apply to money which is received after death. And like we opened up our discussion, the Rishonim and Bava Basra that say that a person can acquire a present after death and then pass it on to his Yarshim would also seem to clearly disagree with the attitude taken by the Minchas Chinuch and the Arsa Meach, who argue that it's impossible to say that somebody acquires something after death and then passes it on to the Yarshim. And we see in the Rishonim that they didn't seem to be hindered by that assumption, and they seem to be able to live with the fact that a person can acquire something after death and pass it on to his Yarshim, and we're not troubled that it doesn't make sense. And even the Yarshim, even the Rishonim who argued on that, wouldn't necessarily argue in our case. Because even though the Rishonim argue and say that a person cannot acquire matana, a gift, after death, that may only be because the gift can only be acquired intentionally. However, a chiyuv of kaifer, it's possible that the Rishonim would agree and say that the chiyuv of kaifer is certainly acquirable after death, and therefore they would agree by kaifer to the Maram and say that a person that kaifer will be subject to regular rules of Yerusha. However, it's worthy to point out that if the Rishonim argue by matana, it's likely that they would argue in the case of a lawsuit which is not obligated by the Torah, and therefore is not chal automatically and may need a person's intention to acquire it.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.